1950s, the geneticist Dmitry Belayev succeeded in domesticating the Russian silver fox. His work was described by the New York Times as, quote, arguably the most extraordinary breeding experiment ever conducted, end quote. And according to Scientific American's Jason Goldman, Belayev, quote, may be the man most responsible for our understanding of the process by which wolves were domesticated into our canine companions, end quote. Wild foxes are not too friendly, and Belayev set out to make them more tame. Out of new litters, the experimenters attempted to feed fox cubs by hand and pet them. The few who were most open to being fed by hand were bred with other similar foxes. And after only 6 generations of doing this, some of the offspring of the selected foxes were, quote, eager to establish human contact, whimpering to attract attention, and sniffing and licking the experimenters like dogs, end quote. They even wagged their tails when they were happy or excited. At the beginning of the experiment, none of the foxes displayed these traits, not a single one. But after 10 generations, nearly 20% of the foxes fit that dog-like description, and after 20 generations, 35%. And after 30 generations, over 70% of the foxes were as friendly as we know dogs to be. 30 or 40 fox generations, by the way, could pass completely unnoticed in the geological record. The tamed foxes didn't just behave like dogs, they looked like them too. Their pointy fox ears became floppy. Their tails turned up at the end rather than down like foxes. Their fur changed. According to the experimenters, they even sounded like dogs. Remember, Belayev and his cohorts only bred for tameness, not any of those traits I just mentioned. They were all byproducts, unrelated to what was being selected for. To quote Richard Dawkins in The Greatest Show on Earth, those other dog-like characteristics seemingly rode on the evolutionary coattails of the genes for tameness. To geneticists, this is not surprising. They recognize a widespread phenomenon called pleiotropy, where genes have more than one effect, seemingly unconnected. The stress is on the word seemingly. Embryonic development is a complicated business. Presumably genes for floppy ears are pleiotropically linked to genes for tameness, in foxes as well as in dogs. End quote. Creationists and Darwinists alike are in agreement that selection in general can drive evolution. Everyone recognizes various examples of artificial selection or selective breeding. You can breed for certain traits in plants and in animals. So we know that selection can drastically change organisms. Natural selection is simply when the environment is applying the selection pressure rather than experimenters or breeders. A creationist might have 2 objections here. Isn't this just an example of microevolution? Sure, but macroevolution is just microevolution plus time. Accepting one without the other would be like saying, I believe in microgravity, but not macrogravity. Of course I accept that gravity is the force that pulls my phone to the ground, but it would be ridiculous to think the same force is also behind the movement of the planets. The second objection I've heard from creationists is that in any example of selective breeding or artificial selection, there's an intervening intelligence, which is their hypothesis to begin with. The experimenter or breeder has filled the role of intelligent designer that God plays on a larger scale. But is it really so hard to imagine selective pressures similar to the ones we've been describing, administered impersonally by the environment? It's a short step from artificial selection to natural selection. In fact, I brought up the example of Belayev's foxes because, as many of you know, the selective pressures that were administered by the experimenters were pressures that were impersonally administered by the environment through natural selection. Essentially, the same story happened with gray wolves over thousands of years, rather than over a few decades in Belayev's case. 30,000 years ago, there were no dogs, maybe even 15,000 years ago. Before cities and agriculture emerged, Canis lupus was being domesticated into Canis lupus familiaris. Genetic evidence has shown that all breeds of dogs are descended from wolves. The initial domestication of the wolf was mediated by natural selection, without any intentional, artificial design intervention. It was only later, in the Victorian era, that humans artificially bred dogs into the wide array of phenotypes we see today. And they were often selecting for purely aesthetic traits, rather than adaptive traits that aid survival and reproduction, as natural selection does. I only bring this up because sometimes creationists will point to dog breeding as evidence against evolution. Many modern breeds of dogs today have congenital health problems as a result of their breeding. Creationists would say this is because they're deviating too far from the original kind that they were designed to be. But this is because the traits that were being selected for were purely aesthetic and have nothing to do with survival and reproduction. Most wolves are not temperamentally suited to scavenge from human scraps, in part because of their long flight distance. Flight distance meaning how close the animal will allow you to get before they either attack or run away. Flight distance is very similar to Beleyev's criteria for breeding tameness. They measured how close they could get to the foxes and how they behaved when they were touched or offered food. A shorter flight distance allowed wolves to get physically closer to human camps and hang around the periphery, which gave them the opportunity to scavenge, eat scraps, and endear themselves to us by being good boys. The few most docile and least threatening could be approached and fed and pet by humans. And because an alliance with another species was a good strategy, the genes that influenced overall tameness and prosociality were selected for. It was a great way to get food and shelter, especially if you weren't the fiercest wolf or didn't belong to a pack. And to state the obvious, wolves are doing just fine today. Being the opposite of tame and agreeable and having a longer flight distance were also adaptive traits. As with all populations, there was variation within the wolf population, and because of unforeseen changes in the environment, an alternative source of food, and mutual alliance, certain genes were selected for. Those genes, which some wolves had ahead of time due to random variation, became adaptive as a result of environmental changes. They bred with each other on the outskirts of human camps. Generations passed, and now there are dogs. Happy Darwin Day. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.